If I could prove that I sat on this land for 3 years, so then, and you didn't complain, you weren't mocha, you put up a fuss, so the odds are I'm probably right for longer. I probably did buy the land. I can find the shtar. The shtar got lost after a few years. So that's the sugya called cheskes about in the third paragraph of Amudasa. So comes in one says, what we can do as follows. You have to prove that you lived there for 3 years, you have to have eidim to prove it. So what if you have one set of eidim on the first year, and then they left, they went to China. The next set of eidim on the second year, they left, went to China. The third set of eidim, and they went to California. So now when the case comes to Beis Din, is that called the Chesed Dibur Shamana? What do you think that's a problem of? Who thinks that's a problem of?
God, they
didn't see the whole thing. They didn't see the whole thing. It's Dovah, right? They didn't see the whole thing. Right? Well, the Chorah, that's a problem. So what's the answer to that question? Do you have any idea what the answer to that question is? Why is that not a Dovah L'chazidah? That's going to be critical for our young couple waiting outside the Yichud room there. No, that's true. But if the Eidim didn't see the sale, if the Eidim say we were there at the sale, then I don't know because of them. Listen, we didn't see the sale, but we saw the guy lived there and eat the fruit for a year, and the other guy didn't complain. So Beis Din has to go and collect all three ABOs. And wait a second, why isn't that a problem? Dovah L'chazidah?
Each year is considered a separate.
So is that true? If I live in a land for 1 year, so I, well, nice, I'm not Zocha on the field. So it's not really true that it's, I mean, it's separate year, but nice, each year is meaningless in Allah.
But yeah, it's the nice of harvesting the.
And I hear what I'm saying, but 1 year of harvesting is not enough to win a case. If all I had was one set of paper 1 year, I'm going home. Right? It's not my house. Not my mother's. So there's a machlekes to show what the answer to the question.
So each for in terms of land, it's each set of eidim are testifying about their year specifically, not about the whole. But compared to the room about yichud, both sets of eidim are testifying about one act of yichud.
Okay, so we're getting there. I want to forget the yichud case. I just want to focus. I want to know why is this not double chesed double?
Maybe because like there's not going to be a contradiction. Because there's not two people that are being eaten on the same.
Okay, we're getting close. Everyone's saying close. I'm going to give them, take one more possibility, then it's going to start.
It's not that they only saw, yes, they didn't see all 3 years, but they saw them for the whole year. They only saw them on or off, and you maybe say, oh, they wasn't there the whole year.
Okay, so everyone's almost there. Okay, almost.
There are never two sets of eating at the same time.
Okay, if I add all your cases together, it would be a double chazidah. Trying to get one answer. So there are many answers to this question, for sure. But I want to focus on one answer that Tosfos suggests. Tosfos suggests that double chazidah means that the Eidim could have seen the whole thing, but they were lazy. They didn't bother watching the whole story. So they come to Beis, they give a half-baked story. Another set of Eidim, give another half-baked story. You put together two sets of half-lazy Eidim. So that's not Eidim. But Eidim means, if the walk of the Beis Din and tell anything and everything that you could have seen, you have to testify on. If you only testify on something that you could have seen more, that's called the Chazidah. Over here, what do you want for these Eidim? The Eidim of Mechuv to stand down for 3 years? They're here for a year. So they watched every single day. Somebody said they watched every single day for 365 days. They watched everything. They didn't have to stay another year. So they saw the whole picture. They weren't lazy. They weren't deficient in the Eidim. So that's not a chesaron. That's not a deficiency of double chatzidah. So not only should we agree to that territory, we should give other people to it, but the wheels started to turn outside the Yichud room. So who's going to tell me? What did I think? What's my chesaron?
Could you go to the door and lock it before and make sure that if the two didn't see that door is locked, they come out, that they see that door is locked?
Well, wait. So the problem is that they have to stand, let's say, for 7-8 minutes, whatever it is, and make sure nobody goes into the room. So what's the mile of this case? What's the advantage of this case?
Well, they weren't able to see the whole story.
These are kids,
they
the whole story.
They did.
That's right. So the first set of eight was standing by door number one. What do you have a time in them? You guys are lazy. You guys are deficient. You didn't see. What do you want from me? I can't see, but it's physically impossible to see both at the same time. So my looking at door number one is the lack equivalent of eight watching an entire year of eating food. And then, so basically, what I told them was that we have to rely on this Tosfos. Well, to rely on this Tosfos, that's not the only answer we're sharing. So I had a few other tzadim. Who's going to tell me the few other tzadim? One that we already almost mentioned on the Tuesday night show. Why was I willing to be very, very negative after Shiloh?
Because already under the
So first of all, this whole Yichud room story, is a far from certainty in the first place. According to Ramah, staying under the chuppah, according to the Sfaidim, where the Yichud is going to be. Back in the home, says the Mordechai, says Badek, and a lot of different answers they can be. So the whole Yichud room is not like halacha, which is a chayvul yav, absolutely necessary, according to everybody. And number two, who says you need what? Who says you need them? What do you need them for in the wedding? The Kiddushin, the Sarksuba, but the Kiddushin in an Eidim is a big machlok as opposed to, do you even need them all together for the Nisuin? So, to read stuff, so this is very often, when you're passing a Shaila, so very often, many rabbis use this kind of mindset. You have almost like three different things to rely on. If any one of these things is right, then we're good to go. So, number one, we have the Tosfos in our back pocket. Maybe it's not even called the Chatzin Dov. Number two, who says you need Eidim all together for Yichud? And then number three, who says you need Yichud all together? So I was comfortable again. There's like a difference between Lechad Chidu and the Biyar and the Shasal Chatz. Lechad Chidu, if it's not a Kedushin, you're able to choose a room, so you should try to choose a room that only has one door. What do you have to align the schools for? But if you're on the, I'm trying to instill you a little bit this understanding that you have to sometimes do these a little bit on the fly. You have to try to, to try to sometimes find certain shittas to combine and to rely on. Sometimes you have extenuating circumstances to again, this is sense what the Rav tries to do to try to figure out, is it appropriate to rely on the shita now? Rely on this Tosfos, rely on this Rambam, etc., things like that. Okay, so the feeling is that I think that under the circumstances that a couple of good started together, you want to be good. Yeah.
Two questions. Is it that both he didn't have to see the whole picture, or collectively they have to see the whole picture? Because if it's a you.
No, you can't have one A and one. That would be no good. That's even worse. Exactly. That's a chatzi A, that's even less than a chatzi
Dabar. Okay, and is the concept of Yichud only a problem after they're engaged, like the helicopter story? Or is it like
Yichud does all the time. Yichud does even a pun in a three.
Last thing I asked about, isn't the Yichud under the chuppah? Is there before the
right?
But then you said like it takes like effect after.
Right, some say that.
But isn't Badekin all?
So those right. So there's one day Mishnah that says the Badekin is almost like the chuppah. It cuts the veil over, that's like the chuppah. So the Mishnah Melech writes, according to that opinion, you have a proof that the chuppah can precede kedushin. It's very strange that very. But I think it becomes a suah quick with the kedushin. Very strange. Okay, yeah.
And so then for the helicopter. Wouldn't it be a problem even if he's not engaged, like getting engaged?
Yeah. Boy, if you're on helicopter, it's a problem. Okay, but I want to try to move into a totally different area of halacha, a whole different saga of cuckoo shaylos. As I said, we'll remember the one that's based on the cuckoo of the stones. I want to talk a little bit tonight about the kashrus of a mikvah, but I don't just mean a regular mikvah, regular standard mikvah. I'm talking about the possibility of using certain kind of natural bodies, collections of waters, lakes, rivers, piles of snow, maybe other kinds of potential bodies of water or water-related, material. So let's just backtrack for a moment. Why do we need a mikvah for in the first place? So for what kind of tzuvah? In the days of the mikvah, you need a mikvah for a lot of things. Tumas, by Sashem, Kutch, by Sinikdash, as well as that, we fundamentally need a mikvah for halachic purposes for three things. What are they?
Kevin.
Tumas Kevin.
Nida.
Tumas Nida and Tumas Gerus. Okay, those are the three main things. Yeah. Some people
who. Tara.
No?
Tara.
Oh, okay, that's a great idea. There are different hover about when you need a full mikvah for that, it's enough just to wash the body down. There are some people who are machmir lechetchiva, they're like with a mikvah every day, every Shabbos, every yom, but those are already chumras, been hungry, Midrash Chassidus says that. I'm not talking about that, I'm talking about a real mekoy, real dinim, potential, real tefillah's nidus for sure than their isa, tefillah's gerus is for sure than their isa, tefillah's kelim is a little bit of machlokes. There's some shem who say tefillah's kelim is mitzvah their amon, but many say it's a repassage for us to mitzvah their isa. But the lemaisa, you need a kosher. So the Torah tells us in Bashar Shmini that there are two different kinds of bodies of water that can double as a mikvah. One is a bor mikvah ha'ayim. A bor is literally you dig a hole and the rainwater collects. That's a mikvah. That's pretty much what we do today. 99% of the time involves exactly that. We dug a hole in the ground, make it to rain, make it to the jungle. Now, we do it to the tune of about $2 million, nicer than that. In theory, because you go to your backyard, take a shovel, dig a hole, and hope for the best. But the problem is that It's going to be a very dirty, filthy, muddy mikvah, and trying to get more people to go into it. So we have a much, much nicer system today with concrete, with tiles, with very up-to-date, high-tech plumbing, etc. But the basic halachic model has not changed one iota in the last 3,500 years. Is dig a hole instead of shoveling the backyard, so we use machinery. It's the same hole, same water, same everything's the same. It's just it's high tech and much obviously because it's much more aesthetically pleasant. But the same as anyone here went to Masada yesterday? Did they show the Bikkur Masada?
They didn't show us, but I went.
Yeah, because it's the famous Bikkur Masada. Yeah, it's the same thing. Nothing's changed.
Are the Arahant was also like mainly clean water?
Yeah, because I'm involved to use some models that appear in the Mishnah and some of the most, but the person actually is tovim in the water, so they're not literally tovim in the rainwater itself. They're touching, they're tovim in water that was affected, that was impacted, was touched. Maybe we'll see if we have some time later on, maybe we'll talk a little bit just in general that I'm involved. But I want to talk first about some of the strange models. So the Torah says if you build a mikvah by making a bor mitzrayim, and the Torah also uses another phrase. There's another way to make a thing called a mikvah, colloquially called a mikvah, but it's not really halacha mikvah. But it's another body of water you can also tumble in.
Mayan.
And the Torah says, Ahmayan a bor. Ahmayan a bor from my Torah. Ahmayan is an underground spring. Anyone who's been in an underground spring recently? Who's in Tzfat? Who gets in Tzfat? Who's you? Who you guys in Tzfat? Did you go there and read the mikvah? Okay, is there a reason for a mikvah? No, it's a mayan. It's an underground spring. It's not a collection of rainwater. It's water coming up from under the caves. So the Torah says even one of those two bodies of water is going to take itself. Okay. So I'll show you the following story. And the story is funny. It has some strange sides to it. And then we'll try to walk through what some of the halachic issues are. It goes back about 15 years ago, so don't know more than that, so I'll tell you, I'll date it exactly. It goes back a little bit more than that, about 18, 19 years ago, something like that. I'll tell you why it's important. I got a call from somebody in California. I used to spend a lot of time in California. My wife is from California, so I used to spend the summers there before, since it's like holidays. So I got a call from somebody in California. There were a group of families that were going on a trip right around the Harash of Tishkov. They were going up to one of the mountain areas. I don't remember which area, which was mountain. I don't know, maybe seven, I don't know. Up in the mountain. Anyone here from California? No. Okay, so where did people go?
Big Bear.
Yeah, it's one of those mountain ranges. So, here's a shot, right? There were married couples that were gone, and some of the women potentially were going to use the mikvah. So they were asking about a certain lake in that area. Was that lake acceptable to be used as a mikvah? That was a shock. So I said, and we'll be talking a little bit about the two girls, and I said to them, it's not so simple to answer that question because there are a few factors. The fact is you have to know what the source of the water is, you have to know if the water is moving, if there's a dam in the lake, if they're made of, if they're outlets that are laying there, is the water always stay in, is the water drip out? So there are a few factors that we'll talk about a little bit why they're important. And sitting here in LA, I think in New York, I'm going to try to postulate on a lake that I never saw, as very, it's not really the way to go. I said, but maybe if you can get me some information about this lake, that's the first hand information about the lake, so maybe we can begin to discuss the shadow. So we got one of the park rangers on the phone. And they started asking about, we want a little bit of information about the lake here. Is there a dam in the lake? How often do we close up the dam? And the park ranger got very, very nervous. And I remember, not the date when it happened. It was, I think, the summer after September 11th. So it was a time when you guys were born, right? No, like born fresh, excuse me, guys. But it was a time in America. Were very jittery, and anything that smacked of any bizarre activity was immediately, tracked. So here you have somebody calling, some anonymous guy calling the park ranger, and asking about the dam in the lake. They thought it was like some terrorist trying to blow up a big bear or something, whatever it was. So apparently, I didn't speak to the park ranger, they all spoke to the park ranger, and he started to get very nervous. What do you guys want? What do you guys know what it's all about? The guy tried to explain to him, no, 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 we're not really terrorists. We're not trying to blow up the national park. We just want to know about information about ritual purity. It did not go well. That was the end of the discussion, okay? The strangest part of the story, I never got to pass to the shadow of the story because they couldn't get any information. Which is kind of left and they went somewhere else where it was. The strangest part, and we get to that local part first, but the strangest part of the story, and those who know me know, I am not a Hasidish rebbe by any stretch of the imagination, but I kid you not that that they ended up going somewhere else. But the night before this group went on their trip, they heard that that particular park area they were going to go to, the entire like place burnt down. Like the whole town, it was a wildfire or something. The whole place burned down the night before they were going to go. So they were like totally spooked when they thought that they had to put a curse on the campsite. So I don't do those kinds of things. I have no idea why the fire broke down and why the place burned down. Well, let's take a look at the shot. Okay, now so we'll always remember the Shiloh by the park ranger, what we were blowing up with the national park, as well as the mysterious fire that occurred that night. So let's see what's going on. What's the lucky? What were the issues that were bothering them concerning this? There's one basic halacha you have to be familiar with, and this really gets the whole ball rolling. We mentioned before that there are these two models for how to tovel. You can either tovel in a mikvah, collection of rainwater, or you can tovel in a spring water. There's a very, very important difference between the two. There's actually a few important differences. The most important for us is as follows. Rainwater can be used, but it must be, you know what the next word is?
Not sure.
It must be stationary. Can't be moving, can't be flowing. Flowing water is called zochel. Zochel means to crawl. It can't be bugged, it can't be moving. If you ever go to the mikvah, remember the mikvah, every kipper, the water is not still. It's not going anywhere. Zochel disqualifies a mikvah, pashas, nidar, isor. A mayon? Spring water? Excuse me. So every big is zochel. It's always water. That's what spring water is always flowing. Where did Chazal know this from? So it's not like showing what the source is. Everyone agrees that this din is not exactly clear what the source of this din is, different possibilities. I'm so keep another, but the bottom line is it didn't get up. But a main mikvah, if it's rainwater, it's gotta be stationary. If it's spring water, it can be moved. If it's also stationary, it can be moved. At least again, these are two different things. But if we have the following, what if we have a body of water that is a combination of a little bit of both? A little bit of spring water, a little bit of rain water. What's the bit? Can we move it up? What do you think the bit should be? What would make sense logically based on all of the knowledge varies on Allah? What do you think you would follow?
Yeah, it would be also because it has rain water, which is not being stationary.
Could be, or maybe could allow you what?
Off-road,
why not? Right? So comes a mission across the shore road. If you have a bottom of water, there's a little bit of both. Oh, that's the $1 million question. $1 million question. If a robe of this body of water is stationary, a robe of the body of water is rainwater, then the psul zochel kicks in. If a robe of the body of water is meimayon, then the psul zochel doesn't kick in. That's the mission of the Kresh Krishna says to us.
How are you able to tell? Oh, sorry, what's an example of
Okay, we're going to get to it in a second. Someone give me an example of water. I gave you two extreme examples. The mikvah in Tinek is rainwater. The Ari's mikvah is really a mayan. Those are easy. Can someone give me a body of water that's a little bit of both? That happens to be moving also. Maybe that's worse.
River?
If you have like a mikvah that, let's say, half of it is like a hole, then water flows.
You could theoretically, I'm saying, but give me a natural occurrence. Not that somebody made a crazy thing, but natural occurrence.
A lot of rivers.
Rivers! Where does river water come from? What's the source of the water of the river? So the rivers usually flow to the ocean. So that don't function to the ocean, they flow to the ocean. So river water usually comes from a combination of different things. A lot of it is rainwater, or a lot of it sometimes is melted snow, which halachically is like rainwater. And very often rivers also have underground springs that feed into them. So very, very common you have a river that is almost a combination of the two. Now, based on what we're saying, this is going to be a very, very important child. Can you tovel in a river or not? Can a person do tefillah in a river at the Shiloh? Last year, when they closed all the Kelim mikvahs in Bergen County at the very beginning of COVID, so somebody wanted to know, Rabbi, it's before Pesach, can I take all my Kelim to the Hackensack River? Can you tefillah in a river? So what's the answer to the question? Can you tell me? Very simple, quick answer. Bet. Bet. Bet's on rope.
What if you, like, if what's in the wildlife is still on top
of the river? That gets very red. It's very, very tricky. That's very, very hard. Water moves around. It's very hard to tell. So again, it's a very simple question. But who's going to give that answer? How do you even begin to answer that question? So don't think that we're the first ones to answer this question. Yeah, Moroi discussed this question. And there was actually one particular river that much of the discussion revolved around. I don't think you can guess which river it was.
Prat.
What?
Prat.
Not Prat. The Euphrates. You see Al Naro's bubble, right? What was the Naro's bubble that's referring to?
Niger.
Bubble sits in between the Euphrates and the Tigris. Yes. Now for us, it's Chidekel. Okay? So the Gemara has a discussion. What's the story? Halacha wise, can I tovel in the Har Paras? A woman wants to know, a gear wants to know, to a scam, can I tovel in the Har Paras? So Gemara quotes the Gemara. Gemara quotes one opinion that says, yes, you can tovel in the Har Paras. You know why? Because you can assume that all rivers, no matter what, always have more underground springs than rainwater. That's just a general a statement of geology, according to one opinion in the Gemara, and therefore everything's good to go. You use Nahapras all the time. The Gemara quotes another opinion and says, no, you can't. Now, it's so simple. Sometimes you can, and sometimes you can't. Who could figure out the geology part of this, or the meteorology part of this? When could you use Nahapras, and when could you not use Nahapras? It's very simple. There's,
I think it's overflow.
So what causes overflow?
Rainy season,
right? If it's the rainy season, or shortly after the rainy season, then there's an awful lot of rain there. And then it's very possible that most of the body of water is rain. It happens to be, in case you're interested, in case next time you go to Iraq for a trip, and you want to take a look at the Euphrates River. So a lot of the Euphrates River is not just coming from rain, it's actually coming from melted snow off the mountains of Turkey. All right? So in the winter, or shortly after the winter, really in the springtime, where all the snow is beginning to melt, and all the rain is coming down, so then the Gemara says you cannot use the Euphrates. Then we have to be concerned, there's more rain than spring, and the water is moving, and it's a problem. But the Gemara says, in the fall, after the long, hot, dry summer season, like in Israel, has anybody noticed, by the way, has anyone seen any rain this summer? Is anyone expecting to see any rain this summer?
No.
Has anyone seen any rain in Eretz Yisrael over the last 5,700 plus years? Yeah, once in like every couple of hundred years, it's only like 10 minutes. But like it's the one thing that's very easy to run a summer camp in Eretz Yisrael, much easier than America. In America, you can run a summer camp and it rains for a week, you have to figure out, how many times do you bring the kids in the same silly ball, so you run out of activities. But in Eretz Yisrael, you never have to worry about the weather. It's hot, but then it never rains in the summer. So apparently in Iraq, it doesn't rain too much in the summer either. And therefore, in the fall time, so when all the snow is long gone, all the rain is long evaporated, and so basically you're left with the majority of underground springs, then the Nahapras will be okay. So according to one opinion, Nahapras is always okay. You never have to worry about it. According to other opinions, you do have to worry about it. Very strange thing. During there were two Iraq wars. So who knows the year for the United States Arab Wars? The first one was in 1990, I think. Am I right? 1991. One of the Iraq Wars was then. And then the second one's a couple years later. I don't know what that was. But the second one took place in March. First one started in January, the second one took place in March. But I remember listening to the radio, and some guy, some reporter, was explaining why America Dafka began the war in March. He said it has to do with the size of the Euphrates. Apparently, when the Euphrates was higher, it was easy to cross. Let me get all the military mumbo jumbo. But he said that the Euphrates overflows in the March time. So I was listening to this guy, and I said, I knew that. It's very Shabbat. Gemara says that the Nahapras on the flow, it's in May Nisan, March time. That's when all the snow starts to melt off the Turkey Mountain. So the world has changed a lot in 2,000 years, but the Euphrates riverside hasn't changed. Fine. So, Tachas, bottom line, I want to know. I want to tovel in a river. Can I tovel in a river or not? So According to some opinions, all rivers are good, all rivers are great. The other opinions, no, they're not. Sometimes, yes, sometimes. No, you got to know what the geology is, the weather, the geology is a lot of work. You can't just give a green light to come over. This was a huge, huge, huge problem in the days of Rishayim. You know why? Because very often you had a Jewish community, it was a very, very small Jewish community, and they just didn't have the logistics to build a mikvah. What are we going to do? Wasn't like today, let's say even a person lives out of town, the closest mikvah is 2 hours away, so he drives to town. It used to be, now there's a mikvah already in Australia, in Alaska, I'm sorry. But for a long time there was no mikvah in Alaska. So there were a handful of Jews in Alaska, so they used to have to go to the flood. It's like a cloud, they can fly to Seattle, where the closest to Vancouver, wherever the closest place is, to Taipei. But in the Middle Ages, that was pretty difficult to do. So the question was, can you use the rivers? And most cities were on rivers. If you think about it, if you think in America, I think of all the big cities that you know. Every big city is always on what? Always on body of water. What is that? Yeah, in the old days, before planes, the only way to get things in and out of the city is only long distances through the boat. So think about it. Chicago sits on the lakes, and New York City in the harbor on the Atlantic, on the Hudson, and all the major cities were always around the world. So in the Middle Ages, it was also true. So you had a Jewish community, so even if the Jews didn't have the wherewithal to build a mikvah, but they always had a river, so the Shiloh was going to use the rivers in there. So Rabbi Tam was there. Rabbi Tam said, all the rivers are good, because you assume it's mostly spring water, and it doesn't matter. And other Rishonim said, that's so fast, that's so simple. So how do we pass in Allah? So there are more paskims that we should not use rivers for tefillah. Reveal we're not supposed to. But if the imam is stuck, it's like that or nothing. There's nothing. So the water in it, I'm looking at the water in it. But in the normal circumstances, we don't want to rely on rivers. We want to make sure that that the mikvah is totally kosher.
How can the people, let's say, that can't use the mikvah ever, take the lake or the river ever, deny the science that it's overflowing and it's maybe rainwater?
So it's not clear. I mean, those who say you can use it or not use it?
Those who say you cannot use it ever.
No, it's not that you can never use it, just that you have to really, really know well when it's almost flooding. I don't know.
Right, so do they need to deny the science?
No. It's not. They're just saying that we can't, you have to really know well enough to be too high to call anything for a time to say this is good enough.
Then the same thing as I can.
Yeah, I'm saying the two minutes. And Tom says you never have to worry about anything. Everything's great. And the second minute says, we're not saying everything's great all the time. We're not saying it's never good. We just, it's too complicated to know. Unless you really, really know what you're doing, you can't just stop and use rivers.
Okay. So I heard Rabbi Tom say that.
Rabbi Adam's claim that the final halacha is like that view in the Gemara that says that there's never anything more than that. It's always going to be wrong.
What is that? Oceans.
Oceans are great. Oceans are good. Oceans are fine. Oceans are good. So, yes, back to stuff. So now, let's leave rivers for a second. I want to come to a lake. Oh, no, can I use a lake for a mikvah? So, there are two questions you have to ask about lakes. Two questions. First of all, what's the source of the water in the lake? If the answer is it's mostly underground springs, that's great. There's nothing to worry about. If the answer is not, that it's mostly rain, then what's the next question you have to ask? Is it moving or not? Rivers, of course, moving. The definition is always moving. But lakes, some lakes are moving, and some lakes are not moving. So it's not moving, moving. Sometimes lakes drip out, sometimes they're outlets. They lead out to other places, there's streams going out of the lakes. That's going to be a problem socially. So that's what I'm trying to get out of this park ranger. So number one, I want to know, what is the source of the water? Those are the two questions you have to know. What is the source of the water? If the source of the water is primarily underground springs, then it doesn't matter what the answer to the second question is. If we move against perfectly okay. But if the answer to the question is mostly rainwater, then it's important to know, is it moving or not? Okay? So very often, in the mountains, in the Catskills, some of the camps, who has been to camp and used the lake for a bit? I don't know. It was camp.
Third
one was the lake?
Underground spring.
Underground spring, okay. Which camp do you have?
Russia
uses the spring. Russia also has underground spring. Right, so before any camp will be marshal a lake to use the mikvah, these are the kind of questions that they have to ask. So try to ascertain what the source of the water is, then also try to, if the source of the water is not clear, and it's more possibly more rainwater, then we have to further see whether the lake is moving or not, and see whether it's dammed up, etc. Good. So I want to move a little bit, hold on, we're talking a little bit about strange scenarios of tefillah, but talk about some warm. couple of more strange narratives. Somebody would quote me the following shayla, that they were, they just come to their in-laws for Shabbos. It's Friday, it was a big snowstorm. They just arrived at the in-laws' house for Shabbos. And their mother-in-law mentioned to them, she had just bought a set of glasses, and was popping it out to the camera, but no big deal. She went to the backyard, and she told all the glasses in the snow. Got called Fred, the rabbi, using his glasses. Look, so we have a lot of things, a lot of shadows. Number one, want to know, is a pile of snow crushing the foot? Number one. Number two, are the differences for tefillah for people, for tefillah's kalim, or are we more naked for shayla and tefillah's kalim? And even in things along the way, that the tefillah was no good, can this guy still use the glasses anyway? Because they weren't all good. So we have a few shayla, a few permutations in the shayla.
Is tefillah more important?
It's also important, as well as the Kohanim, it wasn't killing them. Okay, so let's start from the beginning. So this is primarily a mikvah discussion. So let's ask ourselves, is a pile of snow called a mikvah? Now, first of all, before we can even discuss it, it can't just sound like, oh, now it's snow, it's got to be the amount of snow that would be got to be kosher for a mikvah. Even if you want to tell me that snow is the same as water, it's got to be the same amount. How much do you need? 47. Any idea how much that is?
A lot.
Yeah.
100 gallons.
Yeah, some 100, 10, 50, different sheets is exactly what it is. It's a lot of water. It's a significant amount of water. Okay? So, again, if you have a good couple inches of snow in your backyard, you're going to have well more than 47. The 47 doesn't have to be like in one pile. I mean, as long as it's all connected, it's all spread out in your backyard. So, in theory, you could have 2 inches of snow, but spread out over a long area, so that would be okay. That would be a potentially kosher. However, it's not all clear. So the Mishnah, the second of the cross, talks about this very topic. The Mishnah talks about toveling in snow. What's the shayla? Not clear. Is the Mishnah talking about toveling in snow that melted, i.e. it's water? Or is the Mishnah talking about toveling in snow that's still snow, the way it is, it's still snow? The Mishnah discusses two of the shayla. It's also about a Mishnah, it's not a two of the shayla. It's not clear, is that true of a shayla referring to shayla that melted or a shayla that's wet? Most of the poskim assume, l'chumra of the shayla, that snow in the state of snow, even though snow, chemically, it's H2O, it's the same thing as a cup of water, but it's just a solid form of water, it's basically chemically the same thing. But most of the rishonim assume that you cannot tovel in snow. You have to wait till the snow melts. If it melts, it's tiny. But in the state of snow, you can't tovel. However, not everyone agrees. Since not everybody agrees, there is one opinion in Poskim that makes the following distinction. One thing Poskim says that for tefillas noshim, it's a common, it's crazy, it was a tefillin shell. It's not that no one would be one talking to shell. Tefillas geirim, no one's going to talk to shell. Tefillas kalim, Goshen, Strauss. Maybe through this kalim we could permit. Why would we want to make no matter what's kalim? What would be grounds to say this kalim is a very, very needed area of halacha?
It may not be there.
So we have a major machlokes. Is tefillas kalim deraisa derabbanan? What's the shayla? Do we know what the source of the shayla is? What's the source? What's the source of this kalim? What does it say? A chumash tefillas kalim? Pashas Basas, when the Klaitu went out to fight against the Midyanim, they got all these pots and pans and some other stuff. The Torah says, if they want to use it, they have to kasher it. Called the Bashi Yavu Eishu, they have to kasher it. That's what the Torah gives us, the bit of Libun, that go out of time for days. And then it says, and in addition to kasher, we have to do something else. What's that? Tavir B'mai, Rav Tavir B'mai. So it sounds good, there I say. So it's not clear exactly. The Torah doesn't say black and white, Tavir B'mai. The Torah speaks about being Mitarit. It's not clear, is the possible really talking about Tvila's Kalim was talking about perhaps Eifa Paraduma? So it's not 100% clear. So the Mishnah says, in the very end, the last Mishnah says, the Mishnah says, if you buy a Kli Suda from a non-Jew, it's the case of, even if it's new, it's never used, it requires Tvila, and the Gemara calls it possible. As Machal Yisrael Yishayim is that it didn't derise it in the Rabbanim. It's not clear. How do we pass in our Lachas to a Kem derise in the Rabbanim? come to Shulchan Aruch as the following. Close from the two is a dash of the following shadow. I just had the shadow 2 weeks ago. The following shadow. For the summer, one of my nieces, 11 years old, she called me up from her school. The Mola took them on a trip to the Cana Mikvah. To school over at Cana Mikvah. And everybody had like a spoon or something. And all the young girls under the age of 12 toveled spoons. And now she brought the spoon home. And wait a second, not so simple, not so partial. Can you trust somebody under the age of Aradas Nitzvah that they toveled something? So come to Gemara. Who ever says Pesachim? Anyone why you Pesachim yet? Anyone remember Pesachim on Dalam Rebeis? The Gemara says, what if a child tells you that they did the thing as Chometz? Do you believe them? Do you remember the Dalam in the first part? Not by the first part. Okay.
Huh?
Okay. So in the first part, the Gemara says, if someone under the age of Barbara Smith says that they did the thing as Chometz, since Bidikas Chometz is only with the Rabbanon, you know, Tariq and Zimidi, and Yerik Chometz Adamet, it's the whole institution of Bidikas Chometz is only with the Rabbanon, therefore, the Rabbanon have the right to believe the Kappa. If it would be a Deraisa, then the Kappa doesn't have that money. So Shulchan Aruch quotes that whenever you have a mitzvah Deraisa, first has to be a bar mitzvah, bar bas mitzvah, to testify that they did the mitzvah properly for you. If it's only a mitzvah, the Rabbanon can be made. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Chumas Hadeshin that says, that if a kotan tells them, they tell them, okay, but we can't trust them. You know why? Because Tzvila Skelem is their eyes. We pass like those, we show them that's their eyes. So this particular case for my niece, I went to salvage it. You know why? Because the teacher was watching them. So the teacher to testify that the Tzvila is not proper. It's not that you need a gobble to do the Tzvila, just the gobble has to be, a kotan is not never. But get back to that. So we pass the Tzvila Skelem is their eyes, so that whole clue is going to go by the wayside. You wanted to tell me a story that we can be more lenient to terrible things in snow. It's only two. It's careful to derm on anyway. What's the big deal? So I'm rejecting that. They're saying that we pass the Shulchan Aruch. That's what's given their eyesight. Who's going to respond to that one? Who's going to respond to that?
Yeah. I think last.
Oh, so you have to think through all this, right? Somebody tells you, Shia, you got to think through all these different things. You have to first think, is the big for kosher? And then number two, is it a bachoy? Is it kosher? And is this their eyesight shah, their bottom shah? So the post can say, even if it was given their eyes, it's only their eyes from metal. That's what the boss is talking about, not from glass. Glass is for sure all the midrash. So some Achalani wanted to say that if somebody told you to glass in snow, all right, Zolzai, we can rely on the Mekila, we can have it, you can accept such a Tzvila. So Shverbo, not so partial. Very, very, very difficult. But some wanted to make it. So I said to the person as follows, I said, I think if the Shabbos, the glass is should only talk about again, without a bracha, obviously. We should talk about the glasses over again. But for Shabbos, I think you could use the glasses. Why did I tell you that? Who's going to tell you that? So first of all, some woman, don't write the word of Shabbos class number two. What else is my, what are my, factors I put into the equation?
Shabbos, because it's
sorry, Shabbos, my idea. What other factors?
The snow could have been okay.
No, that's the one factor. What's another factor? Three other factors.
That a Jew could
have
made
them.
The
lack of design.
Yeah, okay. Those are like extra halachic. I'm looking for a halachic factor. Mm-hmm. Another halachic, I'm trying to teach you how to think through a shayla. Right? The goal of this is not just that you create a shayla. The goal of this is to try to teach you how to think a little bit how you would approach answering a shayla. Methodology.
I'm not sure, but you're only using it once.
Okay, so that idea of using it once is definitely a lot of people say that, but it's not true. They could use, according to some, you could use it if it's disposable, maybe, but not just the one bucket. You got any ideas?
Who made the glass?
Well, it was made by a non-Jewish factory or a non-Jewish store, definitely. So I want you to listen carefully to what I said. I told this fellow, you could use the glass. Who's mitzvah's Tzvila's
Kevin?
He's not really chayav in Tzvila's Kevin. She's really the one chayav in Tzvila's Kevin. Right? The din is, the Gemara says that, let's say, the Gemara doesn't say it, the Rishonim didn't say it on the Gemara in the section of the Gemara. Yeah, let's say Reuben owns a kli, and Reuben lends the kli to Shimon. And it wasn't told. Is Shimon allowed to use it?
Yeah.
The Gemara says, no, Shimon's not allowed to use it. We should say, Shimon can't use it. Why not? Why can't you use it? It's not his. He's not really tired. It's not trade. It clearly wasn't totally the same. If you cook something by mistake and the pot was jumping over the throat of his. It's not trade. So why is it that if Reuben owns the clay, why can't you use it? So someone argued that the only time that Shimon can't use the clay was Reuben is the case that Rishon writers has shown clay for the earth. I borrow clay for the earth. So a borrow of Shoel is almost like a shtikolah. Like a little bit of an owner, what do you mean by that? It certainly happens in a clean, that's the character, right? So he has to call the chrayas, he has responsibility. He has to pay off if something goes wrong with his clean. But sometimes he's right. But the only time that a Shoel clean is chaveirah, he has to play with a clean. That's only true if he's at least a Shoel, he's at least responsible if something goes wrong. But if I'm a guest in your house and you didn't talk with the Kalim, even if I break the clay, you won't make me pay me. Imagine, I come to my mother-in-law's house and I break the clay and she charges me for it. Wouldn't be too good for family and dynamics, right? So some folks want to argue that if you're not a borrower, you're just a guest, maybe it's not your problem. It's not even your mitzvah, so it's Kalim. That's a big, big finish. I don't put it used to that. So here, again, I'm putting a few things together, right? So number one, there are some Rishonim who say that snow is good to talk on. There are Rishonim who say that. So, you know, there are some Rishonim who say people can talk on snow. I mean, there is an opinion of Rishonim who says that. We don't like to rely on that. We normally wouldn't rely on that. That's fact number one. Number two, this is a very, very low level use of the mikvah because the tefillah skeva, which in turn may only be the rabbanon, and even if we pass the tefillah skeva, there is a tefillah klitz chuchas and glass for sure the rabbanon. So if the Rabbanon maybe to rely on that sheet, that's not so bad. And to throw out for good luck, because they're to sniff off. Another factor, another mitigating factor is that it's not even his clay altogether. Somebody else's clay. So, and he's not even borrowing it. He's the guest in his mother-in-law's house. So therefore, to see or fall these things, I think that one would have the right to be making of the decisions. But hold on, we're talking about Tefillah's Kalim and Tefillah a little bit in general. I wanted to just share with the beginnings, and I'm not sure we'll get to the whole thing tonight. We'll at least get started with the following shaila. The following shaila that was not just shaila I had to deal with, a shaila that pretty much all Rabbanim, not because of America, could be across the world, so pretty much worldwide, were dealing with. As the Utsvilles came in. It was one of the early Corona shailas. Remember back when the Tilt came and Corona to each other. There was always a combination of circumstances. Well, what happened was when everything started to shut down last year, right after Purim, so the whole question about could we keep the mikvahs open or not? In general, the people who it's safe to keep the mikvahs open. People in the mikvahs had the people around each other, near each other, and water. Nobody knew at the time because this virus spreading in the water. No one had a clue about anything. So, we're pretty much many Jewish communities, including Bergen County, had the following split. To close the women's mikvahs would have been an absolute nightmare. Would have been a sheer disaster. Nobody had any clue how long this is going to be a problem, right? So to stop cold that revolves, unless there was no ATM, it would have been a chashashim with membership. So the consultation, all the doctors at the time, or the answer at the time, so we felt as follows. It was safe to leave the revolves open with a few very, very, very careful precautions in place. First of all, the water was heavily chlorinated, which safely assumed that even if there was any virus that was in the water, it would be immediately killed by the chlorine. So that was pretty agreed upon by everybody. So the girls were always chlorinated, whether it was corona, it was just as a safety precaution, you know, when they went to get the chlorine. So the girls were always chlorinated. There was an extra dosage of chlorine was put into the girls. Nobody was allowed to be together at the same time, waiting rooms or anything like that. It was by appointment only. And literally one person came in. The mikvah attendants were not allowed to be anywhere near the people who were tumbling. They were far enough away, social distancing from them. Obviously, they were wearing masks. So it was totally against the broken masks. I'm saying everybody else was anywhere involved with anybody else was all masked up. And a few other important, and there were, you had to fill out a questionnaire. when you made your appointment, right before you came, whether you were in quarantine, you spoke to anybody, you were concerned, any symptoms or anything. So it was rigorous, right? It was rigorous to make sure the mikvah remained safe and open. So Baruch Hashem, we were able to enroll them. So it was very, very careful. Precautions in place. Baruch Hashem, we never had a closed for many of them. It was not so partial. There were times when we were having a wine, we didn't know, but Baruch Hashem was the proper guy to keep it closer. The Caleb mikvah was more problematic because the Caleb mikvah was not as much of a concern, to think about it, greatest scheme of things. And the Caleb mikvah, so what we started to do is we try to keep the Caleb mikvah open as much as we can also. We also have recorded them. We insisted on people, not congregating in appointments. You know, it's not that one person who came in for a small area, usually can't close. So we tried very, very hard to keep the academy close going. But we started to run into a lot of problems. Problems were, a lot of people weren't able to make it to the academy. A lot of people were quarantined. Those first couple of days and weeks, and it was total chaos. People were stuck in the sick, people were quarantining, and it was a chaos. So you figure, what's the big deal? So you go a few weeks out, you see the academy close. What was the problem? Everyone knows the most busiest season of the year for Kedem Mikvah is, of course, the week or two before Pesach. Make matters even more complicated. Why is before Pesach the most complicated time? Because people are buying new things for Yontif. Who remembers? Why was this total nightmare? It was. Everyone's buying new things. Why? Because nobody's gone away from Pesach. All the Pesach programs were shut down. You remember back in the year, all the programs were shut down. Nobody was going to the parents or the in-laws. My daughter was married. She had stayed in with her husband. Just, little baby. So anyone, a lot of people didn't have Pesach dishes. They didn't have Pesach pots. They didn't have Pesach silverware. They didn't have Pesach glasses. People have been going to hotels for 20, 30 years. They've been going to the in-laws. They've been going to their parents for years. Young couples. Mama should have a thing. So everyone had to start buying online. So Amazon was going nothing. Everyone's ordering all the dishes and pots and pans and silverware and kitchen cups and glasses and everything. So it was a combination of factors. It couldn't have been a worse combination of factors in terms of mitzvah and scale. Because on the one hand, the candle mitzvahs were the koshi open. It was impossible to keep them, try to keep them open safely. And number two, people couldn't even get to them. And even the people who weren't in quarantine were so frightened, no one even wanted to leave the house b'chalal. And everyone had this massive new stuff coming in right before Pesach. What in the world do you do? Is it came with the crisis, COVID? What do you mean? That's a question. I'm about to unscrew forks and glasses. So they had to come up with some kind of pizza that people are exempt from Jewish care. At least temporarily. As I look.
After.
So there are different models. The model that most people use in these models, the din is, the Shem Kuel, they said, we're going to say, some of these other, that the Kli actually belongs to a guy, and I'm borrowing it from the guy, it's not Chayim Kuel's kid. So I have a pot, I have a glass, I have a set of silverware. If I give it to a guy as a gift, I ask him, can I please borrow it back for a short time? Technically speaking, it doesn't have to be told. So there are more rights than the Swiss Kingdom. The only rely on that, there's no mikvah. There's no way. You don't do it at all. You don't have to rely on that. That coup was made for a situation with Ramashto mikvah, or in this case, an accessible mikvah. Thomas, who's going to get a goy? What? No one's knocking on the next door neighbor goyish houses, in the middle of the heart of COVID, asking them, can you please pick up my 6,000 new piece of silver? So what do we do? Anyone remember? That was one option some people did. It's the complicated one a little bit. Anyway, what we did? We set up online a way to sell your kelim, to authorize the Beis Din to sell your kelim on their behalf. You had to fill out a form. Hereby appointing you to sell my pots, pans, etc. Whatever you write down what you want. And then the Beis Din, the one who was in charge of this at the time, would arrange a mechira with the goy. How are we going to do that? The rabbi doesn't want to go meet the goy. Now the goy doesn't want to meet the rabbi. No one wants to see anybody. So the entire sale, the entire transaction would be done online. between the rabbi representing the five, it's like a chizomitz, representing the malvatim and the goyim. That's exactly what you can see. Rav Hashem, we were involved in setting this up last year, saved countless hundreds and thousands of people from the aggravation of potentially, quarantine, going out, using cannabis quarantine. We set up an entire system online that every day we had another transaction going on between the rabbi and the guy. We'll have to talk about a little bit of something, just having to do that, just put that a little bit of ingenuity and creativity to try to create such a system. Okay, so you guys, everyone's come to the Altar of Shabbos.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, good. See that. Okay, good. Hope so. Shabbos before.
Thank you,
Rabbi.
Yes. You said that. Yeah. Well, I have to get it.